Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
And we want to hear now about plans to rebuild Gaza. Now, we know Gaza is in rubble, thousands killed. It may seem obscenely early to even talk about rebuilding, but what if this is the exact time, while the world is watching, to plan for a Gaza to rise through the agency of architecture? That's the demand of the 2021 book Open Gaza, essays and blueprints from architects and scholars from Gaza and around the world, a suggestion for a solar dome over the area to produce local energy, desalinating greenhouses that would produce both fresh water and food from seawater. In 2009, designers Yara Sharif and Nasser Golzari used green stitching, greening rooftops and small street gardens to sew communities in Gaza together, proposed learning rooms where people could be taught how to salvage crushed concrete and rebar for building materials when blockades kept those materials out. There are also whimsical suggestions. A carrier pigeon network? The book is from Terraform, a nonprofit research group devoted to saving endangered spaces through design. It was edited by Michael Sorkin, the outspoken American urban critic who sadly died in 2021 from complications of COVID, and geographer Dean Sharif Sharp, co-founder of Terraform and a fellow at the Aga Khan Program for Islamic Architecture at MIT. We start our conversation today with a basic premise. The Hamas attack was horrific. Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu's bombing campaign, disastrous. He has undermined a two-state solution. Hamas has rejected every peace plan and the idea of a state of Israel. The leadership is not there now. But what if? What if? Dean Sharp is in Nairobi, Kenya, where he's focusing on the needs of Sudan, as he says, another place spiraling out of control. Dean, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, and so sorry about your project partner, Michael Sorkin. What a giant he was. But in the time we have now, we are hoping to hear what we never get to hear. This is architecture and design. It's not rebuilding, which billions has been poured into in the past.
Right. The book is organized around this concept of the right to the city by a French urbanist called Henri Lefebvre. Everyone's capacity in an urban context, their ability to shape their surroundings, needs to be fulfilled. And that has always been a fundamental principle of Terraform, which was Michael Sorkin's NGO that he set up in 2005 to do these types of speculative projects that no one else would touch, no corporation, no government, often no grantees. These were often self-funded by Terraform itself. And Gaza was a brilliant illustration of this. This project was founded by Michael in response to Operation Protective Edge, which happened in 2014, in which there was a massive bombardment. Over 2,000 Palestinian civilians died, civilian infrastructure decimated.
This was Israel's response to Hamas rocket attacks. Then Operation Protective Edge led to the Gaza Reconstruction Mechanism, or the GRM. This was Israel controlling materials going into Gaza they thought might be used militarily.
Right. And much like your own impetus of wanting to not just recount the endless destruction and the political calamity that is well known, but rather to say, okay, what would a Gaza look like that actually fulfilled the aspirations of its inhabitants, that allowed Gaza to look towards its hinterland and to design ring settlements that were surrounded by green agricultural areas?
There's a suggestion that there's a zone of special privilege for agriculture. Denise Hoffman-Brandt talks about fishing boats pulling flotillas of little desalination bubbles. They catch salt water, which evaporates under the plastic bubble domes. It leaves clean water. It is wild.
Exactly. To do fanciful ideas, but they're also grounded in the reality that Gaza faces. So Helga Tawil-Suri, for instance, talks about an internet pigeon network.
This is a suggestion that Gazans use homing pigeons to fly messages back and forth. Sure, maybe, but her greater point is they have no agency in things like an internet.
Right, and have shown enormous agency of circumventing blockades and being able to circulate information, to live in neighborhoods that are built through appropriate materials. And so, for instance, there's a lot of documentation of alternative materials, whether that be repurposed rubble, mud, and other ways in which cement has got through, despite restrictions, for instance, on cement was limited to 90 trucks a day, which was nowhere near what was needed. But what if there was a context politically feasible to achieve in which Gazans were allowed to thrive, dream, and achieve their goals like any other urban context?
Well, and part of the problem is the leadership in Gaza now, which is Hamas. M. Christine Boyer writes about the literal underground economy, tunnels which are privately owned but managed and taxed by Hamas. She writes, the usual story is about impoverishment, suffocation, Gaza under siege, all true. But if you want a Mercedes-Benz, guns, Belgian chocolates, Kentucky Fried Chicken delivered, make an international phone call, make a wire service payment, hire an Egyptian taxi, drive it up to the Sinai, transfer to couriers who go through a half-mile tunnel. She describes this tunnel benefiting an elite, but is there a real question about what if these tunnels could be something that all Palestinians could use, could be a driver in the economy for everyone?
Yes, tunnels would be, you know, to link up urban neighborhoods in innovative ways to enhance connectivity between neighbors.
Well, also what we read in another fascinating and chilling essay, which is written by a woman under a pseudonym. If for some reason you can't get through the Rafah checkpoints, she says you'll be approached by kids on tuk-tuks who will whisper, for a fee, you can take a tunnel. And then they literally meet someone at an opening and they go down this rabbit hole. At one point, she's put in a bin on rails with her luggage, and it becomes almost an amusement park ride. It's almost like some of the fanciful ideas, they don't seem so fanciful when people are riding in bins down rails.
No, right. We actually see these types of merchandise tunnels becoming a reality. I've heard companies like Amazon and so on trying to build tunnels to deliver packages. Which is also another chapter in the book, which talks about smart city technologies that are being deployed in Gaza under the context of the blockade, in which various materials were tracked and movements and people. I mean, this was a very heavily surveilled territory, that it allows a window in which we can see our future urban condition. The way goods and the vital infrastructures that keep urban life flowing are restricted, or it looks like to have every moment possibility surveyed by an outside force.
Yes, what we see in Gaza is that a so-called smart city is actually a heavily surveilled and controlled city.
Exactly. I mean, and this is why we should also always take a big question to the proposition of smart city. Smart for who?
Just if you could talk about housing and homes, which again, it's hard to even think of them now with the rubble that we see. But Salim Al-Qudwa, who was born to a Palestinian family in Libya and then studied architectural engineering at the Islamic University of Gaza, he wrote a beautiful section about the architecture of the everyday, meeting the needs of people.
He was very frustrated in the way many international organizations came into Gaza. They were often more interested in experimental construction techniques or using innovative materials, rather than really sitting and engaging with the Gazan population themselves. And the intergenerational aspect was absolutely crucial. Every building in Gaza is connected to a family. And so Salim and his project was very clear that, you know, you place the older generation at the bottom and younger couples with their children up above, and to create communal spaces, from the importance of the roof terrace.
And also building smaller housing that then families can build upon. So, Dean Sharp, again, we're talking about the 2021 book, Open Gaza. It is a beautiful coffee table book. And Hadani Ditmars, writing in the Marquez review of your book, remembers her trip to Gaza in 1994. This was after the Oslo Accords, Gaza technically liberated. She said it was also before Israel encouraged Hamas in order to increase tension with the PLO, before Israel's Yitzhak Rabin was assassinated by settler extremists for his backing of a two-state solution. And she said Gaza felt like a seaside town arrested in the mid-century. She picnicked with families in citrus groves. It was low-tech, naturally green, men on bikes. She said Gaza felt like a newly reawakened sleeping beauty. And your book also has on its cover a beautiful photo of a young man. He's mid-backflip, and behind him is the stretch of beach in Gaza. Just glorious. But as you write, that's some, you know, young man who participated in parkour in Gaza. Those people have left. We see what Gaza looks like now. Do you think it can go back? Again, there are so many questions. Who pays for it? Who are the leaders on each side of the border? But do you think it's possible?
In terms of the urban design, there is the capacity. Palestinians are some of the best architects and engineers on this planet. And we need to correct the very obvious injustices with a concerted political effort. This is a political crisis. We can't go back, but we can go forward.
Well, and there are, as you said, certainly Palestinian architects, designers, environmentalists standing by waiting to implement their ideas. Dean Sharp, who's co-editor of the beautiful 2021 book, Open Gaza, Architectures of Hope, he curated it with the late Michael Sorkin. Dean, thank you so much.
Robin, thank you so much for your interest in this book.